leadership, national leadership, who helped to create what was called the National Community Relations Advisory Council. And representatives from all the cities came to these meetings two or three times a year and frequently discussed the current problem. It might be a rash of Gerald L.K. Smith meetings. It might be riots. I remember when the race riots began in Detroit, before we were conscious of black-white difficulties, but it was always the little Jewish storekeepers who were the victims of these riots. And we had to approach these things on a national level. And then when we had to go to ask for legislation, it was on the national level. We asked for legislation to facilitate immigration, and this was very slow in coming. You know, the McCarran Act.
Walter McCarran.
Yes. We had a hard time. We were concerned about separation of church and state. These problems crystallized out of our general programs, and we became specialists, as it were, in handling these things. In the city of Pittsburgh, I came to know the superintendent of schools and the officials in charge of many of the problems that we coped with. Parents would come to us if a teacher had been particularly difficult. If there had been a very unsympathetic reaction to the fact that Jewish children were absent in great numbers during the high holiday season, it was disruptive of their curriculum, and some of them took it out on the kids, and we had to kind of come to their protection. It's not settled even now, as far as that goes, but it is one of the things that a community can approach in a united sort of way.
Didn't you ask, for instance, that tests not be given on Jewish holidays?
Oh, yes. I remember we had conversations with the superintendent of schools, and they often were very reasonable. Many of the things that happen because people just don't think. They're not cruel and brutal, they just don't think. Now then, of course, there are some things that don't seem to them important. It doesn't seem to them important that children have to stay out for these double-day holidays, for instance. And, of course, there are a lot of Jews who feel that way, too. I found that I had just as many complaints from Jewish parents who wanted me to be concerned because their children wouldn't go to school on the second day. But these are just the kinds of problems that came in. Now and then, there was a very vicious thing. It might be a wretched anti-Semitic publication or a dirty joke that had overtones of anti-Semitism that appears in some little publication. Some of these things did not strike me as being as important as some people thought they were. I remember when one of the Jewish war veterans brought me a little crumbled up piece of paper that had been torn out of a Greensburg newspaper that had a nasty anti-Jewish joke in it. And I said, now, what are you doing? Oh, he said, all the men at the post passed it around, and they were upset about it, and they said, you should do something about it. Well, I said, the first thing we can do about it is not pass it around among any more, because this is the first thing we learned, and that was that you don't spread libels. And I said, I would be very glad to try to find out who it was who published this. And as usually was the case, it was some bigot who, there was no use trying to reason with him. He was beyond reason. But also, it wasn't important enough for the Jewish community to get disturbed and worked up. It was part of my job to help calm the fears of the community in situations that did not merit the upheaval that was wrought.
Lillian, were there local centers of anti-Semitism?
Yes. For instance, the North Side had a very big German population. You asked me whether there were local centers. And I must, in all honesty, say that the North Side, which had a big German population, clung to the identification with the German thinking much longer than any place else. There was a nest of anti-Semites there. Reports would come to us of of things that were said and done and speeches that were made. And in many cases, I'm sure they were exaggerated, but in some cases they needed to be handled. It was in the Northside Library, at the auditorium was made available for the Gerald L. K. Smith meetings when he came to Pittsburgh. And there was a group of people who swarmed to his meetings. But we made it a policy not to publicize his meetings and not to allow our people to be intimidated by his rantings. And happily, the newspapers quickly saw, I think perhaps they were helped a little bit by one or two influential people who talked to them, that it was not worth publicizing what he had to say. And he tore his hair because he couldn't get the publicity that he wanted. But when he didn't get publicity, well, after a while, his meetings just stopped because he couldn't get the audiences to come.
Was Wilkinsburg a particular center?
There was a newspaper published in Wilkinsburg, the Gazette, I think, which always reproduced the current anti-Jewish things. They implied that Jews were swarming into the country and that this country was just being overrun by needy immigrants who were running from other communities. And the publisher of this paper, I think he just counted on this little bit of sensationalism. Of course, there wasn't much Jewish population in Wilkinsburg at that time, so the immediate residents, the Jews, were not too conscious of the effect on the residents. But there was no question of what there were definite anti-Semitic elements there.
As a child, I remember the Ku Klux Klan being active in Wilkinsburg.
Yes, I think it probably was. I think once in a great while we'd hear about a cross burning. When we heard that, we would, of course, go to the police and we would make representations. But I think we were wise in not making a great hullabaloo about every episode of that sort.
Compare our reaction with the Catholic Church, because I think the crosses might have been more anti-Catholic than anti-Jewish. Did you ever unite with the Catholics in a protest?
No, but the Catholics had a policy in my discussions with some of the Jews. They definitely felt that they should ignore these things, that talking about them and publicizing only gave them credence. And I think they were wise in that. I think that we were wise, too, as we learned not to get all heated up about anything. It was a little difficult because some of our people felt that they should use this liberty that you had in America to speak up and to demand to be protected. But, of course, under the non-censorship regulations in this country and the free speech, you really can't demand. People wanted me to go to the mayor and have see that Gerald L. K. Smith did not get permission to use an auditorium, and this we would never do. This was agreed upon by my board. And I did, however, say to the mayor that I will attend these meetings myself and I'll give you a report. I did. And so that he would know what was being said there. And I used to send a report to the FBI, although I never heard anything from them, but I did send them the report, and to our national offices in New York, but also to the mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. Now, let me see. It's horrible that I should tell you how the work of the Community Relations Council took on a broader character. It was fairly early in my incumbency that we created an intercultural education council, and we had representatives of many of groups in the city and social agencies that had an intercultural character. And we met with regularity with representatives of the public schools, and tried to bring to their attention the requirements of a pluralistic community like Pittsburgh, where different ethnic as well as racial and religious groups had to learn to live together, and that we must not just take it for granted that certain predominant elements determine the coloration of thought in this community. May I bring to your attention the fact that when the bicentennial of the city of Pittsburgh was being celebrated, one of the most effective things that happened was the writing of a book called The Presbyterian Valley. It was a very good book, the history of the early history of Pittsburgh. But I do think that our Presbyterian friends just took it for granted that this was their valley. And they did, of course, put a very strong imprint on it and had played a very important role in the establishment of its early industries and institutions. Now, the Intercultural Education Council flourished for a good many years. I remember that my chairman, Mr. Katz, took a great interest in it. And I recall hearing Mrs. Homer Brown standing up and pleading for books that would take more cognizance of the black contribution. There really were none in those days. And of course, I had conversations with the superintendent, the associate superintendent, and just suggested gently that wasn't it surprising that with all the Jews that were in the city of Pittsburgh, there was never a Jewish principal. There hadn't been. And I received the rather astonishing reply that they understood the Jewish girls didn't want to become principals. And when I asked them why, I was told that they understood the Jewish girls wanted to get married. Well, since I thought that non-Jewish girls also wanted to get married, I considered that this really wasn't an explanation, because I knew at least four who had taken the trouble to get certificates and had taken the extra courses of study and the summer work and were equipped to become principals. And so, not surprisingly, some months later, I learned that a Jewish woman had been made a principal. I think that was Dr. Fanny Pittler, who was made principal of the, is it Baxter? No.
She was in Larimer.
Larimer School, yes. And she was the first. And then after
she had
that,
been at Heron Hill as a vice principal, was it? Or she had been at Heron Hill?
I don't know.
But yes, all right.
But this was just the beginning, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. others have come in, and it have been added. So there have to be firsts in everything, and I thought you might like to know why they had been before. We often had the old problems of the calendar, and the giving of tests, and occasionally the teacher who expressed some very bigoted views in the classroom. And wherever I could, with propriety, I took the matter up with the teacher, and sometimes it had to be taken up with the principal. Not to ask a person to give up her views, but to tell her that she must not override the sensibilities of the Jewish pupils in the classroom by making some of the remarks which some of them did make.
At that time, were you as conscious of the black children in the schoolroom?
No, we hadn't yet. Now I'm going to. So I'm coming to this now. We began to use the expression fair employment practices. And it was in 1945 that I first met with Homer Brown, who was not yet a judge, but a member of the state legislature, Florence Reisenstein, and Helen Green, who was then the executive of the agency interested in the different ethnic groups in the city. I'm sorry, for the moment, I can't remember the name. It's not in existence anymore. There were about six of us, and we talked about the desirability of introducing an FEPC bill, Fair Employment Practices Commission bill. And Mr. Brown wanted to be its sponsor in Harrisburg. A great deal of work went into that. We had to raise money to pay for a professional to staff the office in Harrisburg. I remember we had big public dinners, and I want to say the Jewish community played a very significant role, perhaps out of all proportion. I hesitate to mention the fact that we were such large contributors financially, but we were. It would be self-deluding not to mention the fact that we carried a big part of that responsibility.
Lillian, did the Jewish communities in other cities in the state take a similar leading role? Philadelphia and Harrisburg.
Yes, they did. Not quite as heavily as Pittsburgh, but they did. They were a significant part. I don't want to analyze why others did not. People have to learn that they have responsibilities along these lines, and they have to learn they have to contribute to them. And I think in my possession the books that reveal how the money was raised originally. But it took us 10 years before we got the first Fair Employment Practices Bill passed. It was signed in 1955. And from 1945 to 1955, we trekked back and forth to Harrisburg to buttonhole legislators and get them to endorse a bill establishing a Fair Employment Practices Commission.
Now, did the bill in Pittsburgh, precede or follow that?
It came around about the same time. The first, what we had in Pittsburgh was not an FEPC, but we had a Civic Unity Council. It was written in the office of the Jewish Community Relations Council. And Mr. Nathan Katz, who was our chairman, helped to write it. And I remember taking it to the Mayor Scully, who was then mayor. And he said, you know, I'm going out of office shortly. And you know that if I introduce it, it may develop some enemies. So I want you to take this to the new mayor, whoever will follow me, and see that it gets through. We did, and it was eventually passed. It was a very meek and mild little bill. It had no teeth in it. It called for brotherhood and fellowship and goodwill, and deplored any acts of inequality. But it was the beginning. And out of that grew the later Fair Employment or Human Relations Commissions that we have today.
Was Lawrence the mayor?
Lawrence was very helpful to us at all times. We were indebted to him for many good things. And you know Florence Reisenstein was on the very first commission and was with it right up through her whole life. We were very fortunate to have several wonderfully inspired leaders, of whom she was one. And of human relations agencies that are functioning to this day. And of course, we may note that the more effective they became, the more hostility they engendered. And this is one of the reasons why a movement is on foot today to destroy the Human Relations Commission. Because when they developed the power to go to a manufacturer and tell him that he must change his practices, naturally he resented it. And there are those forces at work that wanted to prevent them from having that power. Now, to go back to the 40s, to the late 40s and the 50s, when we were evolving these functions and taking the lead in encouraging other groups in the city to join hands in efforts at the promotion of civil rights. This was really the beginning of what we call the civil rights movement in the 50s. You recall the famous Supreme Court decision in 1954 about desegregating the schools. We had already started our work, and we created a conference in Allegheny County, conference on civil rights. We started with about 15 organizations, and we carried it up to about 35, and all of whom were committed to an interest in these things, to following legislation, to sending letters and telegrams, and urging and encouraging public officials to take steps along these lines. And from the simple initial work for the FEPC, we went on to fair housing and many of the practices which were later to become the rallying cry for the whole nationwide civil rights movement. I'd like to mention now the general Jewish community. I think it had stabilized in the 50s at about 50,000. There was a moment, you know, in the 20s, when we had 60,000 Jews in Pittsburgh, when the immigration had reached its peak, and we hadn't yet begun moving into the suburbs. But at the present moment, I think a round number of 50,000 will take care of it. There has been a falling off. Just as the general population of Pittsburgh has decreased, so there's been a decrease in the population of the Jewish community. I think we have to bear in mind that many people, for one thing, the young professionals go wherever the work calls them. And many people have gone to California, Florida, Arizona, and in fact, there has been one point at which I was told there were just 42,000 Jews around. But I still use the 50,000 figure because I think that takes in Churchill and Monroeville and these adjacent communities. And I think we have to bear that in mind. Now, let me say also that there was a distinct evolution in the leadership of the community here. I had mentioned earlier in this report that the German Jews dominated the social, cultural, and economic life. And from 1890 to 1925 and 30, when the influx of immigration was at its peak, we had a beginning shift to Eastern Jewish leadership. And by 40 and 1950, that shift has been quite almost complete. I think that there's a new generation, and perhaps we should take note of the fact that just the progress of time, that many of the old leaders died, and many, many of the intermarried. And we can't ignore this because it takes its toll on our numbers.
You mean intermarried out of Judaism, or do you mean intermarried with Eastern Jews?
Well, that came too, but at the moment when I was saying it, I was thinking of the out of Judaism. I know that I had heard Rabbi Freehoff lamenting the fact that if we were talking about people who had married. And he said when they intermarry, they take themselves and their estates out of the Jewish community. And I suppose that must have been a fact. And some of these things. And whereas one group is lost, another group rises to take its place. And I recall when the Federation, we began hearing them talk about training the young executives to take a leadership role. You must have heard that, I'm sure. I think your husband was one of the young executives that was trained to take a leadership role. And in this shift, even though you couldn't tell it by membership in Rhoda Shalom, for instance, because I'm sure that the membership of Rhoda Shalom is now probably 75% of Eastern Jews, wouldn't you say so? At least, maybe more. And they may be reformed, but they're still out of Eastern Jewish stock. Now, by the same token, it's important for us to bear in mind that as this leadership came from the Eastern Jews, so did a growing concern for Jewish education. There's no question that when it came from the Eastern Jews, who recalled the great yeshivas of Lithuania and Poland, where the preponderance of the heritage, the Jewish cultural heritage, was nurtured. And it's from there that our current group of supporters of Jewish education came. In Pittsburgh, what had been the Hebrew Institute up on Wiley Avenue, where it had a very nice building, but the population had shifted so completely that it wasn't serving the purposes of the people there, and they bought temporary structures in Squirrel Hill and now have a completely new building and with a very high caliber institution, one of the better institutions of learning. In Squirrel Hill, too, there is the Orthodox, the Hillel Academy, and the Yeshiva, Achei Tmimi, which is more extremely Orthodox, and the synagogues all have schools, some of which are staffed by teachers trained under the Jewish Studies program that is financed by the Federation. I thought that perhaps that's enough. We can't go back. To do so, that we kept it alive. And we kept it alive not merely to hold bi-monthly meetings, but once a year we had an outstanding conference and brought the great specialists in the field. I remember bringing Charles Abrams, who was one of the first specialists in housing, to Pittsburgh, and many of the other names that remain in the stellar roles in the whole country. Of course, a day came when I had just about the time when I was retiring, when the ferment in the black community expressed itself quite vigorously, and I recall hearing somebody say, "Well, why haven't we had a civil rights council in Pittsburgh?" It was then necessary for me to say we have had it, and some of you are newcomers and aren't aware of it.
But black organizations were always in it, were they not?
Some of them were. The Urban League and the NAACP were in, but not others. And many people did not participate very much. The black people had not become fully cognizant of the need for doing this kind of thing. It was only later that they did. and then they thought that they were the first, which is not surprising. I have often been asked if I am satisfied with the course of the history of the last 10 years as far as race relations are concerned. And of course, it would be very childish.